Show.
Did you know that Eric wears dentures that have been in his family for generations?
It's true. They're discolored and disgusting.
But they have deep personal meaning for Eric, so we ask that you respect that.
And now your host, Eric Metaxas.
Folks, welcome to Hour 2. We call it Hour 2. You can listen to it, you know, first, if you like. In a couple of minutes, we're talking to our friend, Jenna Ellis. She's with the Falkirk Center at Liberty University. She's a senior fellow with the Falkirk Center. And guess what? So am I. So the Falkirk Center is a wonderful, wonderful new organization at Liberty. But she is with the Trump campaign, and she's going to be telling us about her experience recently being at Mount Rushmore with the president.
So we'll talk about that. Mount Rushmore? I thought they got rid of that.
Yeah, right? It was canceled. Before we go to our guest, a lot of the times in the past, we've done this thing called Ask Metaxas, where people write in and they ask me things, or we read letters. Should we do that right now since we got a couple of minutes?
Yeah, we could do that. Surely we could. I wanted to know, this is just me, but we were just talking in the last hour about the schools opening up. And I thought, because Chris Himes has like six children in his house, what's his opinion?
Hey,
on
Chris,
that?
When did that happen? What are you talking about? Six?
Well, yeah, it was a very slow, gradual process, much like, the foundation of a house cracking and ultimately crumbling.
Right.
But basically, yeah, we have six kids. Some of them are in grade school here in New Jersey. Some of them are in, two of the oldest ones are in college in Manhattan.
Right.
And, you know, the yearly cost of college is something like, you know, $50,000, $60,000 now. And of course, they want to make everything remote. So the value proposition of paying $50,000 or $60,000 and staring into a computer screen, I mean, I pretty much did that my entire youth, and I did it for free. So, and that was called watching television. But it's just a little dicey. And of course, with the younger ones, everybody wants their little kids out of the house as soon as possible, like pretty much forever at this point. And so the idea of having to homeschool them, which we've done in the past in other years, but to have no other option, really.
Well, it's unbelievably onerous. It's crazy. I mean, homeschooling kids is a huge thing. I don't know how people do it. I think it's the greatest thing in the world, but you can't expect everyone to be able to do that, number one. And then number two, distance learning, you know, learning on your computer, as you said, it has been proven that it is dramatically less effective than being in a classroom. It has been proven that it's dramatically less effective. I don't need to go into it, but I have heard enough on the subject to know that it ain't the same. By the way, before we change the subject, I got to tell you, yesterday I found out that Harvard is charging the same money for online learning for college in the fall, which is really nuts. I mean, wow. I have to say, the fact they're charging the same amount of money kind of makes you wonder what's going on up there.
Oh, man. Okay. Well, by the way, I got to explain this mug. If you're watching on YouTube, and you should sign up for our YouTube channel, it's got a moose on it. I got this on my honeymoon. My wife bought a bunch of stinky jewelry, but I bought this mug.
Where was your honeymoon? Where was your honeymoon?
This was in Estes Park, Colorado. Okay. You know, where the Overlook Hotel is, the Stanley Hotel. We stayed there for a couple of days. It's supposed to be the most haunted place in America. But anyway, I'm going to have to remove this moose because it's offensive. But that being said,
is it triggering non-mooses?
Apparently there's squirrels that want to be on my mug, not mooses. Okay. I've got an Ask Metaxas. We've got time for probably one Ask Metaxas here. David from Flushing, New York. I love this question. He said, thank you for the outstanding interview with author Robert Leon Davis. Remember that one? Oh my goodness. He says, sometimes real life is stranger than fiction. Also, an unrelated question. I'm trying to reconnect with my faith, but it hasn't been easy. Not for lack of desire or effort, but I can't seem to feel that connection as I once did. Can you please extend any guidance?
No.
All right.
Actually, what a wonderful question. Before I attempt to answer it, let me say that Robert Leon Davis, that interview, I mentioned David Wood, who we'll have next week one of the craziest stories I've ever heard in my life, for sure. Robert Leon Davis, another totally unbelievable true story. There are things in that story. I mean, it's not just like one or three things. It's like innumerable, hilarious, moving, shocking, and then miraculous things. Robert Leon Davis is a story about, you know, so many different things. But if you subscribe to our YouTube channel, go to YouTube, go to the Eric Metaxas Show. We've got 73,000 people already subscribing. We'd like to get that way higher if possible. But listen to that interview with Robert Leon Davis. It is one for the ages, and he's got a book out anyway.
Yeah, he actually also in that story spent several years, decades even, watching TV, as he called it. But it was
I'll never forget it. I mean, it's a spoiler, but he was in the woods for 20 years. It's insane.
Yeah, he was a good cop, went bad, and then went good again. It's just crazy.
But to answer this really important question, I think a lot of times people are looking for a feeling with God. And sometimes you get that. You hear stories of people who get that. But I think we need to say this. God is real. Jesus is real. The Bible is true. Even if you don't feel it, it's kind of like some days my wife and I get in a horrible argument over something stupid and I don't feel love, or I don't feel. And it's like, you know what? I'm exactly as married that day as I am on the best day we've ever had as a couple. That doesn't change. We can't let our feelings dictate our relationship. The relationship with God, I first of all want to say that it is true. It's not true because you feel it's true. Some days you will feel that it's true. But what the Bible says and who Jesus is and so on and so forth, I think a lot of times people are like, oh, I'm not sure. Let me tell you, I've got a million questions every day. But the central question of whether God loves me, whether he died for me, whether he wants me to be with him in eternity, those things are like 1 + 1 = 2. It doesn't matter if I'm unconscious. Those things are true, whether I can apprehend it with my brain at that minute or not, whether I feel that it's true or not. And I think sometimes people look too hard for that feeling. And I think that if you get the feeling, great. It's like in marriage. There are days you feel particularly wonderful, and there are other days you're in a bad mood, or your spouse is in a bad mood. You know, the feeling is really not the issue. It's a side issue. I think that we have to do the things we know are right, which is, you know, listen to a good sermon at least once a week, whether you do it online or whether you do it in church or online and in a church or whatever. We need to feed our minds. We need to read the Bible every day. I have a Bible, one a day. Read the Bible in a year, you know, one a day. That has helped me hugely, because otherwise I've always gotten confused about what do I read today? That's just been amazing. But read the Bible every day. Try to pray every day. Spend some time praying or going through a list or whatever. But don't worry. I find too many people worrying, like, am I connecting or am I connecting? It's great to connect. But if you don't connect, trust me, God is connected to you. The very fact that you care, that you want to connect to God, it speaks for itself. But I think that we need to know. It's kind of like questioning science. You know, you don't say, well, I have a question about this, or scientists screwed up on that, therefore I throw science in the garbage. No, of course not. It's not something you throw in the garbage. It's a system, and we can have questions, but you don't throw it all away because you have a question. And I really think that that's been part of my journey, is understanding that it's not about how you feel. It is true independent of your feelings. Now, that is not a complete answer, but before we go to our guest, let me simply say that there are a number of things you can do. Reading the Bible every day and getting fed through Bible studies online or wonderful sermons online, that's kind of key. And we can talk more about what I would recommend. We've had a lot of wonderful people on this program, but we need to get fed. All right, we'll be right back with Jenna Elvin. The places we used to go.
Hey, and you snatch your right to the left.
Hey there, folks. Welcome back. As promised, someone who was with President Trump at Mount Rushmore. My goodness, Jenna Ellis, welcome back.
Thanks so much for having me.
I didn't realize until just now that you were with the president at Mount Rushmore. First of all, have you ever been to Mount Rushmore before?
That was my first time. And, you know, if you're going to go on a trip and see the amazing historical site, that is the way to do it, with the fireworks, with the Independence Day celebration, and of course with the President of the United States.
I mean, that is truly extraordinary. I've never had the privilege of being there yet in my life, and I look forward to it. But how extraordinary. I wanted to talk to you, obviously, about the president's speech. I read the speech online. I didn't get to watch the video of it. I just saw a clip, a long clip. But I thought it was a tremendous speech. I don't know who his speech writers are these days, but they're doing an amazing job. What he said, I just found it amazing. And then, of course, part of what we need to talk about is the loony response to his wonderful words. So let's just ask first, what was it like to be there in person? I can hardly imagine.
Yeah, it was genuinely extraordinary. And, you know, the entire setting, the events leading up to his speech, to have that type of history among thousands of other patriots. I mean, when you first come in and are seated in that amphitheater, there were so many people there just genuinely so excited to see the president, to be in that moment, to see the history that was there. And, you know, you really, to me, it was the first time really, I think, since the pandemic that I felt a sense of a kind of normalcy. Because it was an open amphitheater and we were celebrating something that comes, you know, every 4th of July. And so to see my fellow American citizens there that were all just celebrating the same thing of being proud to be Americans, that was such a great moment. And, you know, before the president spoke, they had impersonators of President Teddy Roosevelt and Abraham Lincoln giving some of their famous speeches. And it struck me that, you know, this isn't just a monument to, of course, it's not, you know, what the left tries to portray it as is, you know, white supremacy or this or that. But genuinely, the entire scope of why the monument's there really was a lesson in American history. And so to see that and to see the entire scope of the programming, which I know was lost on the people who didn't attend, that was the full scope and purpose of the event, was genuinely to teach the history of America. And then the president, when he spoke, he came with such a powerful, bold message to say, stand up for America, stand up for our history and our heritage and our freedom and liberty, because these men weren't perfect who started America, but they served a perfect God. And they understood what rights and freedom and liberty genuinely mean and our opportunity. And he went through the history of each of the four presidents. And it was powerful. It was a bold stance against anarchy, against everything that the progressive left is trying to tear down in our culture and history. And he built it back up. And his basic message was, stand with me, be proud to be an American, because we have the greatest opportunity for our God-given rights and heritage and freedom and prosperity. And it was just simply amazing.
I wonder how many people watched it on television live. I haven't read anything, but it seems to me that it was such an important speech and in such an important place at such an important time in our history. I mean, you know, the very idea that I don't know if you read it online. When I read it, I almost guffawed because it was so crazy. But it said Sioux leaders, I put that in quotes because, well, I don't know who these people are, would like Mount Rushmore to be removed. And I thought to myself, is this a joke? And who are these Sioux leaders? Doubtless they're Americans, you know, who have benefited from this country. Anyway, it just struck me as a kind of madness has overtaken the country, at least some parts of the country, certainly the mainstream media, and the mainstream media's response to the president's words. That's part of what I wanted to talk to you about. What you kind of wonder why they seem unable, even if they do have criticisms, why they couldn't praise
what was good in the speech and then talk about what they disagreed with. But they seem to cast the whole thing as, you know, fundamentally mean-spirited and divisive.
Yeah, and that's part of their activism. They fundamentally are dishonest. They're not serious about what they're doing. Their only purpose is to advance their agenda, which is anti-American, and it's anti-Donald Trump because he stands for everything that this country stands for, which is the purpose of self-government to preserve and protect our rights, the nuclear family that he talked about. Traditional marriage. He talked about the importance of the church. I mean, all of these things that are our heritage when we recognize that God, our creator, is the one that ordained the universe to which we're presented. Those are the things that Donald Trump stands for because that's the history genuinely of America. So when these activists are trying to then write up their response to this, they're not going to do so honestly. They're not going to look at his speech and say, this is his genuine worldview, and then respond to it honestly by saying, we want to tear down these institutions. We want to transform America into a communist socialist society. We don't want you to have liberty and freedom. We want cancel culture. We want to not tolerate Christianity in America. We want to disband the nuclear family because we don't want a traditional marriage. And I mean, they're not going to be honest about any of those things. So what they have to do is to try to lie about what the president stands for and put up a straw man and knock it down and say, oh, he just must be standing for this divisive rhetoric and white supremacy, which was completely antithetical to any reasonable, objective person who listened to that speech or read it later understands that the mainstream media reaction is completely off base. And they showed themselves activists in a way, I think, more clearly in their response to his Mount Rushmore speech than ever before. And this is a turning point in America. When he is standing up for liberty and freedom and what American society genuinely provides in our Declaration of Independence, and then the mainstream media is attacking him for that, and they're showing their hand so clearly, we are now at a crystal clear observation of what this election is about. It's either the founding of America and our declaration as it provides our rights given by God, our creator, or we are about transforming it into a neo-Marxist, postmodern, lacking truth society. That is the contrast, and that's what we saw with the mainstream media's reaction.
I think that's exactly right. When I consider where we were just a few years ago, where any president would dream of giving a speech in front of Mount Rushmore, to suddenly have people, even like Joe Biden, portray it as inherently troubling. It was never troubling until suddenly 5 minutes ago, some people decided that any representation of anyone, you know, other than themselves, presumably, was unacceptable. A madness has overtaken the country. And I think the reason this president will be reelected is that he doesn't shrink from speaking to those issues. Because, you know, Jenna, I was thinking if another president had been there, another Republican president, or if they were going through some of the things that we're going through right now, they would do what used to be called, you know, they would be presidential in the sense that they would not address these things. So they would be very careful not to address these things. Trump addresses them directly, which of course drives those who don't like him absolutely crazy. So it's a really extraordinary dynamic that we have going on right now. A president who does address these things directly. And I think most people cheer him for doing that.
Absolutely. And in this day and age and what we're facing from the progressive extremist left, And that touches all of us. I mean, there are some things we may not live in a city directly that there are riots, but we do live in a city where our institutions of education are trying to promulgate secular ideas to our children. I mean, all of this cancel culture and this progressive leftism has in some way touched and concerned us. We have some of the Supreme Court decisions that we disagree with because they're fundamentally unconstitutional. And that touches and concerns all of us and our families and our children and the life and prosperity and moral society that we want for the future generations. So it is concerning to every American who understands this country. And for President Trump, he was not just presidential, like you said. You're right. He came in and he directly and boldly said, I am proud to support truth. And I am going to tell you the truth of the stories of these American patriots. And for him to stand up and just boldly declare it, we need that type of warrior right now. And that is Donald Trump.
Yeah. And I was going to say, in my mind, that's genuinely presidential. Whereas in the past, we tend to use the term presidential as somehow above the fray. Okay, we'll be right back, folks, with Jenna Ellis. It's the Eric Metaxas Show. Folks, welcome back to the Eric and Taxes Show. I'm talking to Jenna Ellis, whom I forgot to introduce properly a few minutes ago. Jenna, thanks for being with us. I want my audience to know that you are a constitutional legal scholar, that you are currently with the Trump campaign. And I guess let's think here. Since you may know something about this, and since you're with the Trump campaign, I heard from a dear friend who is very politically connected that Justice Alito was very likely going to tender his resignation from the court soon. Have you heard anything along these lines?
There are always rumors, and specifically about Alito, yes, that's the current kind of buzz in Washington. And of course, at the end of every Supreme Court term, there's always that question, because we do have a number of justices that are more advanced in age, and this wouldn't be unprecedented. There have been justices that have retired earlier than the age of early 70s, like Alito and Thomas. But then there have also been, of course, justices that have stayed far longer on the bench. You know, for example, currently Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who's in her 80s, who's on the bench. So there's always these types of rumors. I'm not sure how substantive they are, but if we look at it from a political vantage point, and assume, okay, what would happen if Alito did tender his resignation? Well, we have 4 months left until the election. That's certainly enough time for President Trump to nominate a replacement and have that nominee go through the advice and consent process of the Senate. It would absolutely change the nature of the election. I can imagine the leftist just all out attack. I mean, we thought Kavanaugh was bad. This would be even more so. I mean, it would be replacing a conservative justice. But again, the liberal left doesn't want to give up any measure of anything that they possibly can to promulgate their activism. And so I think it would be a hard-fought battle. But Eric, to the people who say, well, he would have to wait until after the election, look at the Merrick Garland rule, that's different, because President Trump is running for re-election. We have precedent that presidents going into their second term can nominate, of course, Supreme Court justices. And so Barack Obama was leaving office. He wasn't eligible for re-election. So that's why Mitch McConnell with the Senate said, you know, we're going to wait until after the election. And they don't have to. That's not a constitutional requirement. That was something that the Senate, in their wisdom, said, we are not going to give our consent to hear a nominee and to vet that person. We want to wait till after the election. So there's absolutely no reason that they would have to wait if there was one or more retirements over the next 4 months.
Well, that's interesting. This is just... it's so political. Obviously, the Senate had the power to prevent Garland from getting in. And no matter what the precedent has been with somebody getting reelected, the reality is, as you say, you know, if Trump were to try to get somebody in before the election, the left would portray it as illegitimate. It does seem, I guess there's a lot of political calculation that would go into this. Would it be the wise thing to do to try to get this done before the November election? Would it be better to wait because people would be motivated to go to the polls knowing that whoever is elected would be the one to have the ability to do the nominating? I mean, it seems to me that waiting until after the election might be wiser. Politically.
Yeah, and you know, there is that calculation, because we certainly saw in 2016 that with that empty seat of then, you know, Justice Scalia, who passed in February of 2015, you know, leading up to the election, that was a huge issue that did turn out a lot of conservatives for President Trump. But I do think that the calculation is a little bit different heading into 2020, because unlike in 2016, when, you know, those of us, myself included, who at that time didn't know the president in terms of, you know, he didn't have a political track record. He had a lot of promises. He had a lot of understanding of what he explained his position was, and his vision for making America great again, what he would do becoming president. But now he does have the 3.5 years that we've seen all of his accomplishments. There's so much motivation behind this president, because we've seen he's the most pro-life president in history. You know, we were just talking about his speech from Mount Rushmore, making sure to preserve and protect our freedom and liberty. And so I think that we're seeing that there is a motivation to come out and vote for this president, regardless of the Supreme Court being an issue. And so I think the calculation is somewhat different, but you're right. If that seat was held open, that may actually motivate more liberals to come out than conservatives. But, you know, that, so that calculation may
That's interesting, Jenna. I never thought about that. That is really, I'm sure, you know, wiser and better minds than mine will be chewing on that one, because it really is, it's just fascinating to think that, you know, we only have, what is it, 4 months to the election?
4 months.
And the idea that between now and then you'd have the election and all that, you know, goes along with it on top of something like this, or rather something like this on top of the election. It really is hard. It's hard to fathom. It seems to me that whoever is elected, we know they will have the opportunity almost certainly to nominate one or more justices to the bench, because I can't imagine that Ruth Bader Ginsburg is going to be there for another 4 or 5 years. Anyway, we're going to go to a break. Right. We're going to be right back. Final segment. Folks, we're talking to Jenna Ellis. It's the Eric Metaxas Show. Don't forget to follow us on our YouTube channel for the Eric Metaxas Show. We would appreciate that. Also, of course, I'm on Twitter and Facebook, and so is Jenna. And we love it when you follow us on social media and help us spread the things that we're talking about. Very important stuff right now.
Stands on golden sands and watches the ship that goes sailing.
Dark as shame, darling, dark as shame. Thank you for all the
folks, welcome back. I'm talking to Jenna Ellis, who's with the Trump campaign. Is it mandated, Jenna, that you wear a red dress? I'm just wondering, or is this some choice that you made?
Yes, it's definitely just my choice. So okay. I love the color red, and you know, but I also love all of the bold and bright colors, a lot of them. So.
It's, well, of course I'm joking, as I stupidly do. Let's go back for a second to Mount Rushmore. I really was fascinated that some people were saying, oh, it's stolen land. It was stolen, you know, from the Sioux. And you feel like, wow, wasn't that adjudicated? I mean, do we really want to go back there? And then somebody said, a number of people said on Twitter that the Sioux had stolen it from the Cheyenne, I guess. And, you know, we're just living in strange times. The idea that we would be talking about that, or that some people would be talking about it. And I think most Americans are astounded that some people take that kind of thing seriously.
Yeah, and you know, Matt Walsh of the Daily Wire wrote a really great piece that I would encourage everyone to read that goes through the history and actually negates that argument and is saying, you know, that let's look at the role and genuine history of that land, and also you know, American history in general. But you know, but this is just another example of how the left tries to confuse the argument. And so often they don't want to talk about the actual substance of what President Trump's speech was actually about. They don't want to talk about why we're celebrating Independence Day. They don't want to read the Declaration of Independence. They don't want to acknowledge that it's that our founders talked about God, our creator, that they signed it appealing to the supreme judge of the universe, their beautiful name for God. The left doesn't care about any of that. So they then have all of these other things that they try to get us distracted with to say, oh, no, 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 but talk about this topic. And what we as Christians have to do, I think, is to make sure, and conservatives and even just people who are seeking truth and fact, we have to look at what is the substance of the argument? And is that something that's irrelevant that they're just trying to distract with? Or what's the genuine argument? What is the genuine contention here? Because if we are distracted and we then just answer their questions, then we're getting into more of a meaningless debate than actually talking about the substantive issues.
Well, that's, see, this is the thing. You know, in the scripture it talks about, you know, Jesus says, don't cast your pearls before swine, lest they turn and rend you, right? We have to have the discernment. Does somebody really want to have a conversation, a debate, an argument to discover the truth? Or do they simply want to pretend to have a genuine argument or conversation so that they can confuse the issue and ram their thoughts down our throats? And I think that right now, you're right. When people bring things like this up, they're playing games. It's kind of like, you know, we've all had conversations where you get to a point and just as you're getting to that point, the person changes the subject and says, well, what about this? And what about this? And it keeps going around and around. I mean, somebody needs to say, we can say it here, that the founders, if they could have abolished slavery, it seems clear to me that they would have, or that many of them would have. And so they had to hit pause on it. And then we had a war where 500,000 people died so that we could end slavery. And to throw that away and to see the documents, the founding documents, as inherently racist, Martin Luther King himself didn't see them that way. So what we're dealing with right now is it's a repudiation, not just of the founders, but it's a repudiation of Lincoln, for sure. And it's a repudiation of Martin Luther King Jr., both of whom saw the founding documents as exemplary, as important, and at the very least as promissory notes, to use King's words. So we just have to understand with whom we're arguing and whether it's worth taking them seriously. And I guess that's my long way of saying not so much.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, there are so many people that are not seeking truth and they're not seeking fact. And so we have to be very careful when we're engaging in these dialogues. Is the person who's asking the question genuinely seeking a truthful response or just to confuse the issue and argue? And sometimes, you know, I will still engage with those people, but only if it's in a forum that then there are other people watching who would benefit from the dialogue and benefit from hearing the truth. But if it's just a one-on-one and there are people, I mean, I get these questions on social media all the time, and they're people who are just looking to attack President Trump or they're looking to attack America, and they're not even worth engaging with because that's not a rational, reasonable dialogue. And so you're right, they're confusing the issue and they want to pretend that American history is something completely different than what is. They're trying to rewrite American history. And they're trying to insert these questions like they do, you know, with the White House press briefings every day. I mean, their questions are just so fundamentally shaped in a false manner of saying, you know, that question, you know, why is American history racist? That presumes that it is, and then is asking you to defend against that claim when those individuals haven't actually proven their basic claim. You have to go back and say, well, hang on, you haven't proven that America is racist or that the founding was racist. What proof do you have for that? And make them prove their claim. But that's the nature of their dialogue. And the truth of the matter is that our founders, in their wisdom, created a system of government that allowed the opportunity to create a more perfect union. And we have done that in the past 244 years since the Declaration of Independence that acknowledged all men are created equal, and they're endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights. Then our Constitution provided those specific limited powers to government to best preserve and protect those rights. And we've done that in a better and more, and an improving fashion as we have continued through American history. We've amended our Constitution 27 times. We have the Reconstruction Amendments, Amendment 13 through 15, that have abolished slavery, that have made sure that you don't discriminate your opportunity to vote on the basis of your race or later. It was even after the Civil War that women got the right to vote. So, you know, but this country isn't founded on sexism. I mean, that's going to be the next argument of the left, right?
That'll be the next one, because it's kind of, it is extraordinary to me that people would make these blanket statements. Jenna, we're out of time. Wonderful, as always, to have you. Thank you. And I forgot to mention, we're both senior fellows at the Falkirk Center at Liberty University. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Hey there, folks. Before we leave you for the day, I just was going to say, Albin, Chris, I don't know if, did you read this? I guess it was yesterday. Halle Berry was supposed to play a transgender male. Well, I don't even know what a transgender male is. Is that a man trying to be a woman or a woman trying to, anyway, she said, in, you know, to honor people who are transgender, she, who is not transgender, would not play that role. And it made me think, like, how dare anyone ever play a role other than themselves? Who do you think you are culturally appropriating someone's life when you have not walked in their shoes? You have no right. And even then, playing yourself, it's a little self-centered. Who do you think you are? Maybe you just need to sit down and shut up. You ever think about that? Anyway, that's where we are. Albin, you have any thoughts on the
wall? Well, I was asked to play you in the story of your life, but
how
I said,
dare
no,
you?
I said, and then Eric's going to play me? That doesn't make any sense.
How dare any of us?
Right, exactly. Actually,
yeah, I was going to say, it reminds me of the map that Stephen Wright, the comedian, used to say that he had that was to scale, that says 1 mile equals 1 mile. It's kind of like that.
We are. Albin, you had some thoughts about Uncle Ben's converted rice.
I did, but before I get there, Lando Lake. See, I still have an old package of Lando Lakes. You see that? That's a young Indian or Native American woman. They have now removed her. If you go in to buy Lando Lakes butter, they've removed her. But I don't think they should call it Lando Lakes, because O'Lakes is cultural appropriation. They're actually taking an Irish, like O'Lakes, Lando Lakes. You start to think of the Irish, right?
Got to think about the Irish and leprechauns, right?
But here's the one that I really have a problem with. Uncle Ben's converted rice. Okay.
Okay.
Now they're taking
lines. Break it down.
Yeah, but they've taken the guy off of, because we can't have diversity in packaging, right? You can't have diverse people in your pack. It's got to either be white or nobody, right? So anyway, but I have a problem with Uncle. We've got Uncle Ben's converted rice. Uncle makes you think of Uncle Tom. So you've got to get it. So now it's Ben's converted rice, right? But then when I hear Ben, I think of rats, because of, you know, Ben, it was a sequel to Willard.
Movie, you know, with Michael Jackson.
That's right. Michael Jackson sang the theme song, Ben, da 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 da, and that's when he was still, you know, black. But anyway, so then now you're down to converted rice, and then it's like converted. That's like you're shoving your Christianity down my throat. It's bad enough I'm eating your rice, but now you're trying to convert me. So then you have to call it rice. But you can't call it rice, because people are thinking, who eats rice? Chinese. And what about the European flu we just got? It wasn't a Chinese flu, it was a European flu. And now if you're looking for what the product formerly known as Uncle Ben's converted rice, just go into the store and just look for a package that has nothing on it. That's what you're looking for.
Right. That's the only safe thing to do. And you know, rice, I just have to say, I feel funny about it, because it's just so overwhelmingly, inescapably white. And I know that we should be eating rice. You know what I'm saying? There's something about it. I think
you're inescapably white.
You make a lot of good points. I even think that the tan that I've been working on this summer may offend some people, because you get to a certain point, you cross a certain line, and you know,
you're culturally appropriating the sun.
You're Anyway, I know we're living in crazy times, but whatever you do, guys, at least until we meet again, vow not to play a transgender person unless you are yourselves transgender. I make that vow, and I call on everyone listening to take that vow with me.
I take that vow with you.
Because insensitivity is it's rampant, and we need
to do it.
That's the least we can do.
Yeah, in the 80s, I was a big fan of the Transformers, and they were robots that transformed into different, like, cars and things like that. But I think that might be automotive appropriation on the part of the robots, and perhaps maybe the Transformers should also get canceled.
Uh-oh. I think we better leave it there. Guys, thank you for your wisdom.